Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves and we are still only a first week of this bloody campaign barely behind us, Martin, and it is just carnage. Before we start, live show next Sunday, Wiley Fox, Sunday evening. Martin, what's the story?
Get there around 7 p.m. We'll have two shows, really. It's two shows. You're getting two for the price of one. Myself and Tony will entertain you. And then Rory will rock your world on housing with some of the best people in the country.
He has a great lineup lined up.
Yeah, and really good.
We will release the names as we go along. But, like, yeah, no, fairness to him, he manages to pull out all the stops. And I know he's working hard on the background on that. And more importantly, actually, listeners, it's great to have all you new listeners. Lovely to hear you. Make sure you tell people about us. Share the word. We have no sponsors, no ads. We rely on you guys. We rely on you. More right, let's go. Martin, where are you?
The poll, Tony, the poll. If this was America, Leo Varadkar would be evading Iran right now. He'd just be going for it. Anything to get a boost in the polls. It was a shock, and it is a shock to what I would call the centre establishment, that Fine Gael are so low in the polls. But it's not a shock to anybody else.
No.
Anybody who goes into coalition with one of the big two gets kicked. This time it just happened to be a coalition between Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael. One of them was going to lose badly. Mm. It's Fine Gael.
That's true. People, when you think about it in the psychology of it, they've been in coalition now for a number of years, but the other guys have been able to let them take all the bad news. But 9 years in government is a long time in government. People always go at that stage, people go, I'd like change, I'd like different, I'd like hope.
Yeah, but is Fianna Fáil change different than hope, Tony? I disagree with you.
No, that's what I'm saying, what people want, but they don't get. They're not processing it on the basis of they're just going, we'll try the other guys because. But then again, Martin, that being said, and again, go back to Michael Taft, guys, go check out Notes on the Front. He writes these great blogs and he talks about the fact that the numbers are there for a progressive third option. We spoke to João Pinto in Portugal. The numbers are there for where if you take the margin of error, Sinn Féin could be ahead of.
Well, if you take it, and the trend has been for about 20 years that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael have been losing their share of the vote. The last election, it was 49.8% first preference votes they got between them. There's no reason to see why that trend change.
Well, today's poll has them at 47% combined. 47% is less than in the last election. Now, you know, we can say it's one poll. And they will say that. And I'm okay. I'm actually happy enough to say it is only one poll. But at the end, if it was the other way around, they'd be ramming it down our throats.
But it also.
I want to get really straight into the fact that.
The polls.
Called it out last week. Said these, I'm going to say it. These people who are just wanted this presidential style US election of Leo versus Michal. Shame on you, because you've looked the other way as a large portion of the population. You've once again failed to put your finger on the pulse of the actual, the citizenry. You missed it around repeal. You missed it around the water charges. And now you've missed this again. You need to get your head out of your arse, get out of Leinster House and get out and meet people on the streets.
That's right. 100%.
And I'm now, sick of some of them at it.
Now, there is a huge opportunity here for the left. And I'm saying it's a possibility. I'm not saying it's a probability. Mm. Left parties didn't show well in the poll. Mm. What I would say about that is they're going to hit the ground running now and they're going to try and work really hard. And it's not really reflective because they're not running candidates in all the constituencies. But there is a possibility that a block of left votes will hold the power. Now it's, can they work together? Mm. Can they work together? And we've been preaching this for a very long time. You know, anything 45% that goes Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael combined leaves the door open for a broad left coalition. Mm. We're getting there. We're getting into that territory.
We are absolutely getting there. I said it 2 days ago, disappointed in the quality of the campaigns from parties of the left so far. Seen very little in terms of, making inroads, very breaking through, not getting their message across. I know it's a mess. It's hard when you don't have the finances, not it, but I'm not up for that. You need to bring people on the journey. You need to be able to show them, sell them your vision. There's an opportunity. The opportunity actually is going to come, I think, if we can see it post-election, where they can sit down and say, before we speak to the big two, let's speak to one another.
Yes.
That's where the opportunity is. Negative campaigning. It's hilarious, right? But as I said myself, I said, you know, and it is embarrassing because, you know, we can't get them to build houses. We can't get them to implement SláintecareCare, but we get them to take down a video. And therefore we think that that's great. Lads, we're losing, because they, at least they're making these videos. They're out there in their fancy hybrid cars and they're out there all across. Now, they're going to have to bench the Taoiseach, which is hilarious.
Like, bench Taoiseach, bench Murphy, bench Harris. Who's left? You have to bench Regina because she's an absolute disaster. So who's left?
Two things. It's going to be campaign's going to be run on Simon Coveney and Pascal Donoghue. Yeah. They're the only
the old school.
The only safe pair of hands that they have. Yeah. I mean, everybody else are. They're carbon copies. There was a conveyor belt of these plastic politicians come off through the Washington program where they went off and got brainwashed basically, and they come out with this nonsense of, you know, this is how we are. But they've no life skills and they've no empathy. We know that.
Well, let's look at.
We were told we were reverse snobs last year, Martin. Reverse snobs for calling it out. But obviously the people agree. They don't feel that these people actually have it within them. The Irish Times Politics podcast did a really good breakdown of how the government has performed over the course of it. And he went through education, housing, health, and the economy. Bar the economy, guys. And the economy is two-tier. It's not working for us. They failed. Not only they failed over the course of 9 years. So we can talk. It is very much housing has been what's been spoken about at the doors. And the numbers that, like, this is where it brings on what we really want to get into. We've only a couple of minutes left, but what we really want to get into is the fact that, Martin, you were saying this year we're going to talk about lies.
Yeah, lies. And look, when you look at the numbers that have come through just from this poll, if it stayed the same, and they're talking about a Fianna Fáil Green coalition, absolute bollocksology. Why would they be in a minority government when they could go into coalition with Sinn Féin and actually have a government that's not a minority? And Fianna Fáil will be doing everything to avoid a minority government. Everything.
But hang on, I want to go back to the lies part. Okay, so we've seen the Minister for Housing make up figures.
Yep.
We've seen him talk about these insane figures that he's pulled out of his ass. We've seen that, you know, these acquisition, you know, build doesn't mean build. When they say build, they mean build, acquire, rent, lease, all of these things, and they just chuck them into even the word build doesn't mean build anymore. They're not getting away with it because people are starting to call it out. It's starting to they're being asked now because there's good journalists out there, and shout out to the journalists who are on the front line, who are at these things, and they're putting their hand up and saying, excuse me, Minister, don't agree with that.
Keenan Brennan did it. This week,
Richard Chambers did it in front of the Taoiseach as well. About certain, these things are making a difference because you see, then they can't think on their feet because they've only got the soundbite. They've said, well, we're going to say 10,000 houses, and it's not 10,000 houses, and we're able to call them on it. Regina Doherty, as Minister for Social Protection, has made unbelievable claims, and we've seen countless doctors say, no, that's not true.
Well, she made that claim about the tips.
Yeah.
And it's been fact checked by the journal, and it's simply untrue. And instead of saying, we fact check it, the facts don't stand up, why not just say, it's a lie?
Oh, you get that. But what I find worse about it, some of these claims are now going into their actual, their leaflets.
The bump,
They're sending them out to constituents saying, vote for me because I'm actually, and it's a lie. Like, we're talking about numbers of, we see one of the big lies was numbers of new nurses, number of new.
GPs.
GPs.
The GPs, 1,000 new GPs. And I mean, there is no, I mean, it's ridiculous.
Oh, listen.
Anybody anywhere in the country will tell you it's impossible to get on the GPs list.
We just had Matthew O'Toole in here, and he'll tell you, as a man who's fighting hard for the future of GPs, it's not at all viable at the moment.
There also seems to be some sort of mental block with the electorate. You had Fianna Fáil, who literally ran us into a wall and destroyed the economy, destroyed the country, and Bertie Ahern telling everybody to commit suicide if they spoke up against what was going on in housing at the time. Yeah. Now they're back on pole position, and you gotta say, people, seriously, what is this? Do you think Fianna Fáil is the solution to Fine Gael, or Fine Gael is the solution to Fianna Fáil? It's absolute nonsense.
Ireland is an inherently centrist country. And that is proven by the way, the fact that we've had 100 years of these two parties. But what we saw in Portugal, who had 40 years of that, that actually when they took a chance, when they took the chance and took the risk in people's minds, because people don't like risk, and they don't like, there's a small C conservatives, a lot of them, and when they take that risk and actually find out that, well, hang on, the economy didn't all go. It's not Venezuela, you know, because they keep throwing that Venezuela nonsense. You can have better ways. We know when we look at the numbers, Fine Gael economically are insane. Yeah. You know, spending twice the price on homes.
Yeah, but look at Fianna Fáil's first promise out the door is something like a CESA plan to give people money for nothing to buy houses. That's just going to, that's throwing petrol on the fire.
Straight into the pockets of developers and straight onto what we now have finally some sort of slowly rising property market. You'll just kick that off again. You'll just burn it. We don't need to go down. Look, I mean, the one thing we learn from history is that we seldom learn from history. Please, please, plead with your parents, plead with your colleagues and all the rest. The answer is not to go back to what got us into the mess in the first time.
No, it's not.
And the answer is most definitely not to give it to others. There is a chance here. There is an opportunity here. That's what I would say. Go for it.
Now, I would say Sinn Féin have been excluded from the RT debate, which is going to be a presidential-style debate. And now they're saying, look, you can send us a tweet for an invite or a letter. I think Sinn Féin should just sit back and let Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael at it. Fine Gael are going to be out to tear down Fianna Fáil. And all the opposition has to do is sit back and sell your own message. You don't need to negatively campaign. Let them negatively campaign each other and come out with the positive message. Give people a real alternative.
Gonna leave it there. I would say the campaign this week is going to be very interesting to see. I think Fine Gael have had a disaster. I think Fianna Fáil have just benefited by just doing nothing. I want to see a lot more from the people who are coming forward on the left. Like, I want to see policies. I want to see manifestos. I want to see bloody videos. Like, I saw Kieran O'Hearn as a first-time candidate in Labour. He made a funny video about the name recognition with Bertie Ahern. Bloody thing did great. How simple, if you can break through.
60-second videos. I said at the last general election, 60-second videos, bit of personality, bit of policy, works with people.
Lads, this is the opportunity. Don't let it slip past. And that's a message to the candidates. That's a message to you as a voter. Get out and vote. Make sure you vote. I'd say vote down the ballot and make sure you bury the other guy at the bottom.
All the way down. We have proportional representation. Use it. Go the whole way down the list. The whole way down the list.
Yeah. Coming up now, you will hear our conversation with Niall O'Toole of the Sock Dems in Galway West. He is their policy representative on health and fixing our public services. Niall has worked with the NHS in England and Scotland, and this conversation is not so much a general election pitch. It's more about what, as working with Roisin Shortall on the implementation, well, hoping to implement Sláinte Care, where we are, what we need to do, and a bit more around our health service and how Niall has seen it working in the UK, and even though it's under pressure there, some of the things that we'd like to adopt. Have a listen. Thanks. Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves, and today this is going to be part of our series on the health service. We are delighted to be joined in studio by Niall O'Toole from the Sock Dems, and he is their policy advisor for health. But much more importantly, actually, Martin, we need to tell people this is not viable.
Yeah, look, health. This podcast needs more patrons. We always need more patrons. We want to be healthy. We want to keep bringing these to you day in, day out. Everybody who listens to them likes them. Spread the word. Sign up as a patron. Get onto the website.
Niall, I'm not going to waste time. We are talking today about the fact that you guys, your co-leader, Roisin Shortall, she was the driver of Sláinte Care. She was implementing this in a previous life when she was in the Labour Party. She tried to do these things. It never got off the ground. You've been around. You've gone to look at the NHS model in the UK. Do you want to share some of your learnings?
Yeah, so like people think that, like, I think people have given up on, a lot of people give up on the fact that we can ever have a good public health system in Ireland. And I go out to the doors and I talk about health and people say, oh yeah, yeah, sure. Like that's going to happen. And I have to tell people that actually this is so, Ireland is so weird. Like in other places, being the Minister for Health isn't like Angola.
Yeah.
Like it's just a normal civil servant job. And
it's not, you mean it's not intractable?
No, no. And most European countries have built decent public health service and we haven't. And what we've ended up, and basically and what we also end up with is politicians who really don't understand the nuance of health. And I'll just like, because the big thing that we do wrong in Ireland that we, that other countries don't, that, that other countries do better is they have good care outside a hospital. And so basically like we do very basic healthcare in very expensive hospitals. And it means that we're wasting a lot of money and we're not getting a good health service for it. And so one of the things I would have done, say, in Scotland is investing in these community care teams. And if you look at, say, three groups of people, people who are dying, people who are frail and elderly, people with serious mental illness, those three groups would be around 50-60% of the people who would be in hospital beds. And there's far better ways to look after a lot of their healthcare outside of hospital. So at home or in community care facilities. And so what we've been doing is setting up these community care teams with GPs, psychiatrists, physios, pharmacy, like all of the things that people need, putting them in the community. And then you can take care of most of their healthcare outside of hospital. If they do need to go into hospital from day one, they're planning on what kind of supports they need when they come out. And that way it's absolutely brilliant for patients and patients love it. It actually saves about 30% of the overall cost of their health system. So we can have a better health system for less money.
How much did you say? Just repeat that.
About 30%.
Okay. So 30%. So
say if you think what's the cost of looking after like 100,000 people who are older falling? We could reduce that by about 20-30%. And then that frees up a huge amount of beds. It would free up practically about two or three hospitals in Ireland then for the whole system to work better.
And we've in Ireland, we have this terrible phrase that we use for elderly patients that is bed blockers, but they are not blocking beds. The problem is that there is no care once they get outside of the
hospital.
Exactly
right. Because people, it's completely unfair to older people. Now, it's right that they don't need like complex hospital care.
Yeah, acute care.
Yeah, but they do need care.
Yeah.
And they there's different levels of that they need. Now, they shouldn't be in acute hospital beds, but they do need care. And so if there isn't anything out there, then of course hospitals can't let them out because it's not safe.
Am I right in saying there's about 300 beds blocked altogether in what they call blocked in the system at the moment?
Yeah, it's huge. Yeah.
And that for the election, there's 30 places, extra places after being added. So, you know, 10% of the problem is being addressed just for the election period.
Yeah. And in a very expensive way too.
Yeah.
So it's like trying to cover over the cracks. And this is the problem with politicians now is they say, okay, there's problems in hospitals. Mm. Let's build more hospitals or let's build bigger hospitals. And people don't realize that actually buildings don't take care of people. People take care of people. And so there aren't like doctors and nurses waiting at home, waiting for Simon Harris to have more money because we can't get staff as it is. We can't fill posts.
That's another issue. There's consultants first, and that was discussed on the TV last night about this new consultant contract. Now, they've tried this before, and it was an abject failure. But I did mention at the time, nurses are as much of an international commodity as consultants are.
Absolutely.
Yet nobody is saying, let's throw market rate at nurses.
No, the amount of Irish nurses I meet in English hospitals is unreal. Same with doctors. Like we're Irish people run the NHS.
Now, I know from Ireland that the two major problems, and we hear it over and over again, but nobody seems to be addressing them, is waiting lists. Okay, Sláinte Care is great. It's a long-term health plan, but there are, you know, somewhere between 500,000 and a million people sitting on waiting lists, and they don't want to know Sláinte Care will fix this in 10 years. They want to know, when will my 2-year-old who has an appointment 4 years from now actually get to see an orthopedic surgeon?
Yeah.
How do we solve that problem?
Yeah. So the way you solve that problem is by having a few areas in the country that have very specialized in those waiting list operations. And so this is, 'cause what happens at the moment is whenever you have those waiting list operations in with hospitals that have accident emergencies, as soon as the accident emergency is overrun and people are on trolleys, those waiting list operations are cancelled to free up beds for the people coming from A&E.
Yeah.
And so what we need to do is take all those operations outside of the A&E hospitals and have specialist hospitals just for those operations. And what you have, and it might mean that if I'm in Galway, I can't have that operation in Galway. No, Galway's a big centre, as you probably have in Galway. But say if I'm in Limerick, I might have, or in Tipperary, I might have not have that operation in my local hospital. I might have to travel to Galway or Dublin.
Mm.
But it means that you'll go in on the day, you'll be seen by a team that absolutely knows what they're doing, and they'll get through it. They'll build up that experience and expertise where it goes really quick. And there are sometimes, and I know the stats on this stuff, so I know that whenever you concentrate specialties and whenever you have teams that really know what they're doing, it's far safer and far better for patients. And I know just from the stats in the NHS that they were very bad at publishing stats in the HSE, but in the NHS I know that if my son was sick, I would drive right past some hospitals for different types of care and go to another one because I know that team is better, or that they have better outcomes.
Now, the other question I wanted to ask, and it's to do with A&Es, and I've heard this anecdotally from quite a few people working in the medical system, that the drugs problem that's coming into A&Es is what's clogging up A&Es. And this is people who are working, who are recreational drug users, who are getting off their heads on coke on the weekend, and they're ending up in A&E. And this is what's blocking up A&Es over and above. That's the capacity eaten away. Whatever little bit of capacity they have is gone with this completely unnecessary abuse of drugs, which is leading to greater ills within our society, as we've seen this week. It's just getting worse and worse. How do we tackle that problem?
Yeah, well, I'd say alcohol is probably actually a bigger problem than drugs in the health system. So we spend a huge amount of our health budget on alcohol related disease. Drugs is definitely a contributor to it. I don't want to stigmatize people who use drugs or who do drink. And I think people should always have healthcare. We should just plan. We need to plan for the health system to deal with that demand on the health system. But we also do need to have proper public health measures around alcohol and drugs so that people are taking less or are taking it safely, and don't end up in hospital. And I think that's a really important thing that we need to get doing.
We advocate very strongly here for a safer from harm model. This is our, the beauty of doing what we do is that we don't have to have that nonsense of balance. We like to talk and be honest about it. No, we advocate for safer from harm models, and we'd like to see that if people have, if someone is taking drugs and that it's problematic, that they're treated as a healthcare issue and not a criminal justice issue. And I think that is the way forward. And I think we're making very slow progress. And I think the government have made, they've said some of the right things, but they haven't followed up with the right actions. Much of the case of a lot of the health policy. Do you see a problem right now between the dynamic between the public and private health service in Ireland?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the way we do public and private and how it intertwines in Ireland is completely bizarre, like compared to other countries. And there's quite a corrupting, leakage between public and private.
It's been kind.
Yeah, and it's really not something that we can keep doing. And so I think there's excellent progress on this with Sláinte Care and with the De Butler report.
Mm.
And now it's going to take a lot of implement. We just need to get it done over the line. I think the next toll is where we really need to.
Isn't it funny where we always put the two-tier system. Must be the most used phrase since 2.5 years of doing this podcast, that all the solutions to all the problems exist. It's the lack of implementation.
Yeah.
And that absolutely drives me wild.
The implementation deficit disorder.
Yeah, well, that, I haven't heard that before, but I'm stealing it now.
IDD, have it.
So that's our worst health problem in Ireland.
But it is. It's genuine. I'm glad you laid it out there because, and we don't hear it. It's very frustrating as someone that we're doing this here. Martin's talking about patrons. We really don't, this podcast isn't viable. That's that's the facts. But we also then see where they're having a conversation on the mainstream when they're talking about these issues, and then the next thing is brought to you by ex public private hospital, and go for your checkup, and you know your
well, it's even more
insidious.
It's even more insidious than that. I cringe every time I hear those ads that say you deserve better.
Yeah,
you know, I absolutely cringe. Health services is the epitome of the two-tier system with Ireland that exists pretty much through everything.
Yeah.
Your entry level for decent health in this country is the same as your entry level for a decent house. It's 100,000.
I think that the right test of a public health system is what percentage of people have private health insurance.
Yeah.
And in Ireland, just practically everyone who can afford it has private health insurance.
Because they're afraid not to.
People are terrified of the public health system. And I'll just tell you, so I met an older woman in Ballyban in Galway who really didn't have much money, and she was sick. And she instead of going into the Galway hospital, into the A&E, she went and borrowed €750 from that money that she didn't have.
Mm.
And she went to the private hospital because she was terrified of her life of going in.
Mm.
And that's the kind of fear that people have of the system. And so practically everyone who can afford private health insurance in Ireland does. And then like what that means then is we don't have a good, we need to really, if we're going to solve this, we need to lean into our public services.
Mm.
And if you look at, say, the NHS, which has a decent, it's under pressure, but has a very good health system, only around 14-15% of people have health insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And most of those people just have it from work anyway as a benefit.
Mm.
So most people trust the NHS and trust their family's health with the NHS. They know it's going to be there for them, and we need to get that back. If we keep going down this model where we erode the public health system, we're going to end up with an American model where it's basically a charity case.
I'm gonna shout the one thing that I can hear our begrudgers shouting: where are you going to get the money for that?
Yeah, well, to be honest, there's a lot of money already there that needs to be spent better. So we're talking about the community care models.
Mm.
That saves 30% of the funds that we're using for older care.
Mm.
So actually, there's so much ways that we've made the system structurally inefficient. That I'm not saying that we don't need new money. We probably do. We have an aging population, so it's going to, like, the cost of healthcare is going to grow.
Mm.
But that we can do so much better with the money that we have already, just by reorganizing how we give care to people, doing things more preventatively, doing things better between hospital and community, really making the most of people's skills and experience. So there's a lot of money there that we can be used better, but we do need to invest, and we can't do this with tax cuts at the same time.
Mm.
So we need to invest in this now so that our costs don't balloon any further. And when I hear Fine Gael talk about how they're like fiscally prudent, like they've destroyed the health service, and they've locked in a ballooning cost of the health system, because the way we're going right now, we're going to have to build a new hospital every year or two.
Mm.
But we don't have the staff to staff it.
But and then again, when you do build a hospital, you could build it on the moon cheaper. You know, you could build it. I mean, we need a children's hospital. There is no doubt. And we've needed it since I was a nipper. That's a couple of years ago. But we've needed one since then. We've needed
during the rise.
It just goes to show they can't get it right. Absolutely clean slate to start with.
Yeah.
And they go for a site that was, you have to see it to believe it. Mm. People don't understand that James's Street site.
Mm.
You're building on a postage stamp in the middle of one of the busiest places in Ireland. Access is practically impossible.
Yeah.
Access on foot is impossible. Never mind with kit and equipment. So they make the wrong choices.
Yeah.
And then instead of drawing back and say, look, we made the wrong choice.
Yeah.
There was a greenfield site out there. We could have put everything we need out there. They just double down and they double down and they double down until we get to the position. Nobody knows what this is going to cost, but it is going to cost.
And it's going to cost.
And
a
it's
lot,
to the detriment of other health services. And that's the big issue.
Yeah. And I think if I was Fine Gael, and if I had Fine Gael's record in managing the public service, I wouldn't believe in my ability to pull this off either.
Yeah.
And I'd be cutting taxes and giving it back to people because I wouldn't think I'd be able to use it properly. But that line of thinking, if we give up on the state being able to do this, and if we just say, look, you're on your own, lads.
Yeah.
Like, figure out, let's the private sector sort it out.
That's the rights argument for universal basic income.
Yeah.
They're saying, well, we gave you that. Now spend it on healthcare. Now spend it on, you know, childcare. Now spend it on. That's what they would love a UBI to mean. They would love that because it would say, well, look, we threw you 200 quid. Now spend it in the private market. And we're out, you know, and the simple fact is that that's mercenary. That's neoliberal. Yeah. But market solutions haven't fit.
Not in health. I mean, if you look at the countries that have good health systems, like the Scandinavian country, I mean, they're the social democratic countries. Mm. But they're not
communist countries. They have free markets.
When James Reilly first touted bringing in an entirely private health system, when they went back and did the figures, what they discovered was that the most expensive way to provide universal health care is through a private system.
Yeah.
And the most economical way to provide it is through a completely public health service. Now, how do you fix the public health service when you have a private health service running in tandem? You can't. Yeah. You have to say, no, we're actually getting rid of public or private health altogether.
Yeah, well, I mean, certainly you have to separate it and say, if you want to have a fully private system, go get health insurance, take the full cost of that and go to the private sector. So like if people want to use private hospitals, that's fine. But we have to separate the public from the private system, just like they do in England, like they do in most countries. And really, we have to set higher standards for public services in Ireland. And we just can't accept our political system and our civil service delivering anything less. If people say the NHS is in crisis. Whenever I say I've experienced the NHS, people say, oh, the NHS is in crisis. The crisis in the NHS is something we would kill for to have.
Yeah.
Like a crisis in the NHS.
4 hour wait is a big wait.
Like basically, whatever 10% of people wait more than 4 hours to see a doctor in A&E, I get sent in to knock heads together.
Yeah.
And people start getting fired.
4 hours. Four hours, you're just settling into your seat in A&E.
And so look, we need to have good standards and we need to expect those, and other countries. If those standards slip, their politicians fucking know about it.
But we get this trope from the right all the time that says, "Look, there's more money being thrown at the health service,
most expensive health service now, in the world, bar America."
Yeah, okay, now.
Which is also a Basque case, by the way.
But those of us who understand that that's coming off a very, very low base. That the underspend for 20 years was incredible. So they're only playing catch up. But yes, they will have to spend money. There is no doubt about it. They will have to spend money because they didn't spend it for 20 years. But we get this trope the whole time. Oh, where's the money? The vested interests. This, you know, that there is some sort of vested interest in there that's soaking up all the money. And what they genuinely mean is unions.
Yeah.
And they're saying unionized people are what's soaking up the money. But that's not what's taking the money.
What's soaking up the money is that we do very basic healthcare in very expensive hospitals. And we can talk about admin, we can talk about unions, but like the very basic thing.
Which goes back to the argument that the private hospitals then get to cherry pick the simple things, take them from the public sector and charge top rates for them and they get paid for them. I would love to go around the Dáil and get them to show of hands and say who has VHI here,
everybody who's in, I think pretty much everybody who's in the Dáil has private health insurance. And I think that's part of the problem.
Yeah.
When Kate O'Connell had to bring her child into an A&E.
Yeah.
It was
a revolution.
She was utterly shocked. And they were trying to shut her up really fast. Yes.
I I can afford private health insurance, but I don't on a point of principle. Mm. And so about a year ago, I had a concussion. I wasn't eating for 36 hours.
Makes sense, really.
I went into...
sorry, that was a cheap dig. Couldn't resist.
I went into A&E in Galway and I was waiting on I didn't even get a trolley. I was waiting on a plastic seat for the whole night. Actually, I was told I had to stay there all through the night. I knew I wasn't going to see a doctor till the morning. So I actually went home with the IV still in my arm, slept for a few hours and then came back in.
Yeah.
And it's grim. It's chaos.
No, it's
and
grim,
politicians
yeah.
are completely isolated from that.
Yeah, they never see it.
And it's not just health. It's also, they don't take the bus.
No.
Like, they don't know what it's like to live like a normal life.
Well, in fairness, Leo takes the bus when he's campaigning. So, in fairness, once in a while he jumps on
Well, actually,
the bus.
I'll go back. My local Fine Gael TD takes the bus, but also still claims the £3,000 in allowances. I mean, how can you have that? You're claiming travel for something that costs 300 quid. You're claiming £3,000 per month.
I know. It is. the waste and the fact that they're so isolated from it. And I think that's the problem. I mean, I would dearly love to see it as a condition of service as a TD that you must rely on the public health system. I'd love to see it.
Oh, I think things would change very quickly if that was the case.
Yeah. That's it. I think that's it. We've come to the end of it. And thank you so much for coming in and having a chat with us. Health is one of those issues. It doesn't have to be Angola. It doesn't have to be Angola. We could at least get it maybe to Brazil. You know, a little step. We'll go one better. It is fixable. It's all, and you're in a system where it is fixable. And it is, you mean, the NHS, we'd love to have something like a model like the NHS here with 4-hour waits being considered absolutely atrocious.
Yeah.
Love to have it.
Thanks for listening, folks. We do a lot of podcasts on the Tortoise Shack. There's Disturbing the Peace. Rachel is knocking it out of the park week after week with these amazing things that scare me and Martin thinks are very funny.
Young people are so funny to me.
Yeah. And Rory knocking it out of the park with Reboot Republic. Head over to tortoiseshack.ie. We'd love to have you look at other podcasts. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Great. Thanks so much, lads.